Next up, tickets, please. Tickets, please. Yes, we're taking you inside our live event at Caltech's Beckman Auditorium, The Science of the Silver Screen. We recorded that show earlier this year on a hot August night out in Pasadena, California. And Caltech physicist Sean Carroll joined us to talk about being a scientist on a Hollywood movie set. He also joined us as our VIP judge for our first ever Science Friday movie quiz. So stay tuned for that. Set your cell phones to stun, and let's sneak on in. In the movies, when you watch Spider-Man hang from a single thread of spider silk, or you watch Superman leap tall buildings in a single bound, you might catch yourself asking, I know I do, how did they do that? How did they do that scientifically? How do the writers figure out the science of these supernatural characters and their worlds? And what's the balance between science fiction and science fact? That's where my next guest comes in. Sean Carroll is a theoretical physicist at Caltech and a science movie consultant. Good to have you back, Sean.
Thanks, Ira.
Yeah. So what's your approach when you work with writers and producers? Are you just a fact checker, or you got to be more than that, right?
Yeah, I'm not even a very good fact checker, actually. I'm a theoretical physicist, so... But the very first thing you learn as a science consultant is that it's not a documentary, it's not a class, it's not a lecture. You're there to tell the best possible story. So the right way, the right attitude to have going into talking to the people from Hollywood is, how can I help them tell a better, more interesting story?
Mm-hmm. I'm Ira Flatow, and this is Science Friday from PRI, Public Radio International. Now, you consulted on the Thor movies, and Thor comes from Asgard, which is a flat planet.
Actually, Asgard doesn't even exist.
Really? But, yeah. I'm shocked. Shocked.
So, fact checking there. Yeah.
So they had a scene on a planet that was a disc, right? The planet was a disc. So what's the challenge in checking or writing science for that kind of thing?
Well, I have to give it enormous credit because much of the reason, part of the reason, maybe a lot of the reason why the Marvel movie universe has been so successful is that they always have science consultants. They love the science at Marvel, despite the fact that it's a comic book universe. And occasionally we were able to save them from a faux pas or two. So they had this scene where Thor and the Frost Giants and their friends were fighting on the edge of this flat planet, which is, okay, fine, it's a comic book movie. But then, you know, someone's going to fall off the edge of the flat planet and go down, I presume.
I guess
don't know.
That's down, yes. Right?
Yeah. And so the scientists were like, no, we just can't, you know, Frost Giants, fine. But falling off the edge of the planet, there's nothing to pull you. The gravity pulls you toward the planet, not off the edge. And the director of the movie had an opinion, and the head of the studio had another opinion, and the head of the studio sided with the scientists.
Oh, that's good. That's good to hear. Yeah. So you also helped the producers with developing Bifrost Bridge. Tell us what that was like.
So the Bifrost Bridge is from Norse mythology. It's the way you get, if you're a Norse god, from Asgard to Midgard. Here we are down on Earth. And so that was adopted by the comic books in Marvel in the 1960s and was going to be in the movie. And so Kevin Feige, who was the president of Marvel I just mentioned, said, so what... how can we make that a little bit science-y? How do we actually describe getting from far away in the galaxy? Because they knew that eventually, you know, Thor and Iron Man were going to have to appear in the same movie. They wanted a common universe. And so I said, well, you want to get from one place to another in a science fictional universe, you go through a wormhole. And Kevin Feige says, no, we can't call it a wormhole. That's too 90s. And, you know,
really?
The physicists are like, no, that's the word that we use. So I said, well, you could call it an Einstein-Rosen bridge, because that's what Einstein and Rosen called the 1930s when they invented it.
That's what I would have said,
so
sure.
If you watch the movie, Natalie Portman's playing Jane Foster, the scientist, said, they must have come through an Einstein-Rosen bridge. And her assistant, Kat Denning, says, what is an Einstein-Rosen bridge? And so the mentor, Stellan Skarsgård, goes, it's a wormhole. You know what that is.
Here I thought it connected Brooklyn and Manhattan. You know, it's like... So what's it like working with these writers? Is there an overlap between the scientists? They respect your opinion, you know, or they look at you as a burden they have to put up with, you know?
You know, Hollywood's a big place. There's a lot of different people who have very different attitudes. But you know, the way I like to think of it is a typical writer or director in Hollywood who has not yet caught the bug has an attitude towards scientists that we might have towards wardrobe consultants. When we wake up in the morning, you know, we just say, like, I don't need a wardrobe. I'm just going to get dressed. I'll do fine. It's not that important. I have other priorities. And that is the attitude of a typical writer or director towards scientists. It'll be fine. And so what we're trying to do is to change that culture a little bit and help people understand that not only can you copy edit and get some of the science right, but by using scientific ideas, you make a more interesting, compelling, dramatic story.
All right, we're going to see how all this plays out with our Science Friday movie quiz. You've agreed to be the judge of the movie quiz?
Yeah, it's a multiple choice test, so I'm not sure that my judging is going to be really important, but yes.
Well, somebody has to. Thank you. We'll be right back after this short break. This is Science Friday from PRI, Public Radio International.
This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. Back to our show, The Science of the Silver Screen, recorded live at Caltech's Beckman Auditorium this summer. Next up is our science movie quiz. And since you know this is radio and you can't see the stage, I'm going to pop in here and there to remind you what's happening in certain scenes. Physicist Sean Carroll is our judge, and our producer Annie Minoff will be helping us out as official timekeeper and scorekeeper.
This is our first live Science Friday movie quiz. Sean Carroll is sitting in as our judge for the night. How well do you pay attention to the science in the movies? Well, we're going to test your knowledge, but you might know science, but do you know movie science? Are you all ready to play the game? All right. Now, this is how we play the game. We have two teams that are going to battle for the title and a few prizes, and they're already on stage on the left and the right. They're coming up on the stage. And let's meet our teams. Representing the home turf is Team 1 from Caltech over here. Step up to the mic. Tell us who you are.
Hi, I'm Tegan Wall. I'm a fourth-year graduate student in computational and neural systems here at Caltech.
Wow, and your playing partner is?
I'm Zan Sun. I have a degree in physics from here, a bachelor's in science, and I'm a scientific software engineer at eSolar, which is a solar thermal power technology company.
Wow. Pretty heavy. We know, it sounds like you know your science, but do you know your science movies? We're going to find out. And your opponents over here is from NASA. Yes, welcome. Step up and tell us who you are.
My name is Lauren Chu. I'm actually a Caltech alum. I got my degree in mechanical engineering, and now I work at JPL as a spacecraft mechanical engineer.
And you're a very familiar-looking playing partner.
I'm Bobby Ferdosi. I'm one of the engineers on the Mars Curiosity mission and now Europa Clipper study. And I feel like I've just volunteered as tribute for, like, the Hunger Games equivalent for science.
It's Mohawk Man. You recognize Mohawk Man. Everybody ready? Okay. Let's go to question one. All right, here's question one worth 1 point. Starts out simple. See if you know the answer. In Gravity, George Clooney's character, Matt Kowalski, drifts away from Sandra Bullock's character, Ryan Stone, after they get tangled up in the satellite. Sandra Bullock may not have been able to rescue George Clooney, but in this scene, he could have been saved by physics. Let's watch.
You remember this scene, right? They're tangled up in the parachute cords, dangling from the space station. George Clooney's slowly drifting away.
Just hold on, and I'm going to start pulling you in.
Pulling Sandra Bullock with him.
Just hold on, hang on. I am going to pull you in.
Ryan,
I'm gonna
listen.
Pull you in.
You have to let me go.
No.
The ropes are too loose. I'm pulling you with me.
No.
You have to let me go, or we both die.
I'm not letting you go. We're fine.
Ooh. Whoa, here's the question in that movie. What would actually have happened in real life if Bullock had let go of Clooney while she was attached by a rope to the satellite, like she was? Is the answer A, he would fall rapidly down to Earth, B, he would float in the same place, See, he would float away around the curvature of the earth. Contestants, you have 15 seconds. Write your answers down now. Go. They're done? Think they're done? We said
five
it was...
5 seconds left.
Thank you, Annie. Beulah the buzzer for those of you old enough to know what I'm talking about. Okay, let's go over to Team Caltech first. What answer did you write down?
We said
you
B.
wrote B. He would float in the same place.
I mean, once there's nothing pulling him anymore. There's no gravity. There's no angular momentum. Once they've stopped, they've stopped.
Well, you didn't have to just eliminate A and C. B, you knew B was the answer. Okay, what do you guys have? B also. Bobak, what was the thinking on that? Same thing?
Yeah, pretty much the same thing. There's no more force acting on them except for gravity, but they already have the orbital velocity.
Sean, could what's the correct answer on that?
They both got it right, Ira.
All right. Now you have consulted on a lot of films. Could you have had another scenario there?
Yeah, I want to say two things really quickly. One is being a judge up here is very easy, but my real role was I made the original questions a lot harder than they were. So this is even harder than the original questions. But yeah, the wonderful thing is that gravity is this movie where 99% of the science is completely correct. And here, clearly there was a dramatic need that Sandra Bullock had to make this choice, George Clooney had to float away, spoiler alert, ex post facto. And so they just invented a new law of nature that pulled him away, and I thought that was kind of a shame. And if somehow the science consultant had really been on the ball, they would have said, look, make the scene where both Sandra Bullock and George Clooney are floating away with no ropes attached to them. And if you remember your action and reaction from Newton's laws, one of them could have been saved if the other one, presumably Clooney, threw her back to the spaceship. And that would have been a really dramatic moment in exactly the same way while obeying Newton's laws of motion.
There you have it. Better. We need to have that film have an alternative ending to it over there. All right, Annie, well, what does our score say? What is our score at this point?
Well, we are all tied up. Caltech has one, and JPL also has one.
All right, tied up 1-1. Questions get a little harder. Round two, our second question is worth 2 points. Thank you. Twice the number of points. All right, we have a memorable scene from Jurassic Park, where scientists reveal just how they were able to get the DNA that they used to clone the dinosaurs in the park. Here's that scene.
Sometimes, after biting a dinosaur, the mosquito would land on the branch of a tree and get stuck in the sap. After a long time, the tree sap would get hard and become fossilized, just like a dinosaur bone, preserving the mosquito inside. This fossilized tree sap, which we call amber, waited for millions of years with the mosquito inside until Jurassic Park scientists came along. Using sophisticated techniques, they extract the preserved blood from the mosquito and, bingo, dino DNA.
Oh, Jeff Goldblum looking at you. Nature will find a way. Remember that line? It was my favorite line. Okay, so extracting dinosaur DNA from ancient mosquitoes trapped in amber, that might work in the movies. But when scientists do extract ancient DNA, it usually comes from a different source. And just this month, for example, scientists found a cave in Wyoming with the remains of hundreds of mammals from 20,000 years ago. And paleontologist Julie Meachin said this. She said, and here's the question, if there's blank in a bone, then we can be pretty sure there may be ancient DNA still left in the bone. What is the blank in the bone that she's talking about? I will give you the team a hint and say we're looking for a major protein component of the bone. You'll have 15 seconds starting now. I said they would get harder, didn't I? A man of my word in this one.
5 seconds remaining.
What is in the bone? Oh, there's the buzzer. Time's up, markers down. Let's start on this side. What have you got on your board? Marrow in the bone. How many of you thought that marrow was the right answer? Okay, let's go over here to JPL.
Caltech.
Caltech. Ooh, I made that mistake.
We also answered marrow.
Marrow, both of them said marrow. Were they right? Well, we spoke with Dr. Meacham, and this is what she said.
Well, if there's collagen in a bone, then we can be pretty sure that there may be ancient DNA still left in the bone.
So the answer we were looking for was collagen, you geniuses. Science. Annie, what is our score? How did our contestants do in that round?
Well, we are still all tied up. Caltech has 1 point, as does JPL.
And there you have it. Okay, it's neck and neck. Let's go on to the more difficult question. Number three, which is worth 3 points. John was a consultant on this movie that we're about to show you, so you be very careful on your answer, because the judge is the real judge in this one. Pay special attention to this clip. It's a clip from the movie Angels and Demons. Have you seen that one? The Illuminati steal a vial of antimatter from CERN, and I didn't write the movie. And it's science fiction, folks. And they drop 1 gram of antimatter over the Vatican. Let's watch the hijinks that occur.
Just to jog your memory, there's this vial of antimatter floating over the Vatican. Then a huge blue explosion, fountains explode, and Tom Hanks and all the revelers go flying through the piazza.
Whoa, didn't want to be there when that happened. Now that is a science fiction movie. What would happen in real life if the Illuminati dropped a 1 gram of antimatter? If it was dropped over downtown LA today, what would most likely be the outcome? Would A, the atmosphere would ignite and burn up, maybe help with the smog problem just a bit? The antimatter would fall to Earth and turn into a black hole, or there would be an explosion similar to a nuclear bomb. All right, contestants, 15 seconds. Choose the right answer. Go. Did you have fun on that movie, consultant?
I did, yes. That was my first big major movie consulting.
Really? Really? 5 seconds.
Got to meet the Illuminati, so...
That's right. All right, we got time, but before we ask the contestants, let me ask the audience. You can choose A, B, or C. Let's see who voted for A, who thinks the correct answer is A. Anybody? A couple of Illuminati on that side. How many think B? All right, how many think C? John, what's the correct answer?
The correct answer is C.
C. Did you have C? C?
We do.
C in that team? Both got C. Could anybody actually put antimatter in a vial like that? Has anybody ever done it?
You could put a little bit in there. They talk about a gram of antimatter, so
right.
Something like 10 to the 20-something atoms of antimatter. We don't have and never have had nearly that much antimatter. It would be very hard to store it, but it's not violating the laws of physics.
I'm Ira Flatow, and this is Science Friday from PRI, Public Radio International. So why would it explode like that? What's going on?
Well, antimatter, when it comes into contact with ordinary matter, their particles and antiparticles collide and they annihilate into energy. And so the fun thing was, when we were asked, I was asked, what would it look like? And I consulted with my own physics consultant, David Salzberg, who works with the Big Bang Theory, and we realized it would explode, but it would be like a series of small explosions rather than just one big one, because there would be a first explosion that would evacuate the region around it, and then it would keep going. And then the writer's strike happened, and we lost contact with the movie people. But then when you see the movie, like, you know, over a year later, it kind of does look like that.
Yeah,
and
does.
No one who I'm sure was in the audience goes, well, that's very realistic physics.
You had to be there. No one was there. All right, Annie, what's our score?
Well, we are still tied. Caltech has 4. JPL also has 4.
Wow, pretty smart. We anticipated this. So we have a bonus question. A bonus question, and this last point, this question is worth 4 points. 4 points, so it's still anyone's game. Here we go with the tiebreaker, hopefully. All right, question, movie. Movie The Avengers. Seen The Avengers? Loki steals the Tesseract in order to open up a portal to Earth and subjugate all of humanity. Here the Avengers discuss just how he might do that.
When did you become an expert in thermonuclear astrophysics?
Last night. The packet. Subic's notes. The extraction theory papers. Am I the only one who did the reading?
Does Loki need any particular kind of power source?
He'd have to heat the cube to 120 million Kelvin just to break through the Coulomb barrier.
Unless Subic has figured out how to stabilize the quantum tunneling effect.
Well, if he could do that, he could achieve heavy ion fusion at any reactor on the planet.
Finally, someone who speaks English.
Yeah. Do you understand any of that dialogue? That's what the question is all about. See how smart all our technology people. In that clip, Tony Stark and Bruce Banner mention very high temperatures, the Coulomb barrier, and quantum tunneling. What process are they most likely referring to? Is it A, nuclear fusion, B, quantum teleportation, or C, time travel? Here we go, contestants. 15 seconds starting now. Wow. Well, how do you find the jargon they put into that film? The writers must have a tough time coming up with all that jargon.
5 seconds remaining.
5 seconds. Okay, let's start on this side first. A, saying nuclear fusion. Okay. A, saying nuclear fusion.
Sean? I said there should be an essay question, but you didn't.
The correct answer is A. Nuclear
yes.
fusion. Can you tell us at all, got a 30-second explanation, what they were talking about?
Whole point in nuclear fusion, you want to take a nucleus, like hydrogen or something like that, which is just a proton, and fuse it with another proton. The problem is they are both positively charged particles. Like charges repel each other. So you have to get them very close, overcome the Coulomb barrier, perhaps by high temperatures, or perhaps by quantum tunneling.
And there you have it. Annie.
All those words made sense.
They do. If you put them in the right order by the right person, they certainly do. Annie, what's our final score?
Well, Caltech has 8 points, and JPL also has 8 points.
It's a tie. Yes. Congratulations to the team. Annie, just to remind them, what did they win?
All of our contestants will get a Sci-Fry swag bag with a Sci-Fry t-shirt, tote bag, and a signed Sci-Fry pocket protector. And from KPCC, a t-shirt and travel mug.
Wow. Thank you, Sean Carroll.
Thank you, Ira.
For giving us a lesson in movie science, fact, and fiction. Let's congratulate our teams for playing.
Science Friday's live science movie quiz, recorded at Caltech's Beckman Auditorium with the help of KPCC this summer. That's about all the time we have. BJ Lederman composed our theme music. Our thanks to our production partners at the studios of the City University of New York. Have a happy new year. I'm Ira Flatow in New York.